Intervening in biological processes to mass-produce food has always made some people who value nature above all nervous. But when scientists developed the capability to directly select genes in food species, the anti-GMO movement was born. GMO stands for genetically modified organisms. Activists like famous worldwide crusader Vandana Shiva have successfully kept a number of strains of genetically modified seeds off the market out of a sincere concern they might be dangerous. But the movement's tactics are often at odds with science and may hurt the very people in the developing world, Indian leader Vandana Shiva, who's trained as a physicist, not a biologist, claims she's trying to help. Mark Linus is a visiting fellow at Cornell University and author of The God Species, How the Planet Can Survive the Age of Humans. He was one of the founders of the anti-GMO movement in the United Kingdom and has fought alongside Vandana Shiva. But he now believes that the skeptical anti-GMO movement has become more anti-science than pro-nature and pro-health.
Skepticism is a reasonable place to start when you're assessing a new and potentially very powerful technology. So I don't have a problem with that. And, you know, I think my own activism in the past, you know, I was very strongly anti-GMO. I was one of the original anti-GMO activists here in the UK. You know, I personally was involved in destroying trials of GM crops, canola, sugar beet, maize, and I felt very strongly about it. But at that time, I wasn't well informed about the science, to put it mildly. And it was really only through writing scientific books about climate change, so a different topic, but I became more scientifically literate, and I realized actually that you had to look at facts which were produced by the scientific community, not sort of just what you were hearing, what I was hearing from the environmental campaigning groups who were all against GMOs already. But eventually I felt it was better to be honest, if you like, than sort of keep it as a dirty secret.
What do you make of people like Vandana Shiva, who's really attracted a huge constituency around the world and has a lot of power in determining how certain nations in the developing world deal with GMOs?
Well, I have a big problem with that, because essentially Vandana Shiva's case is that farmers in developing countries are better off being poor and better off using outdated seeds and outdated technologies. You know, she's somebody who gets paid $40,000 in business class travel to go and jet around the world to make speeches about how great it is to be a poverty-stricken Indian peasant. And so I have a big problem. I think it's important for people in developing countries, farmers in particular, subsistence farmers in particular, who've got their families to feed, to be allowed to access better crops, to be allowed to access agricultural innovations which can improve their livelihoods. The whole GMO debate, I think, is very skewed. People who are against it are against GMOs because they imagine it means, you know, big evil corporations, a model of industrial monoculture, which, you know, I'm not in favor of either. But it's a much, much broader field than that, and there's many ways in which genetic modification can actually be used to improve environmental outcomes.
Let's take some of the Shiva claims, some of which may have been embodied in your original position, and take them individually. GMO crops cause farmer suicides in India and throughout the developing world because of the frustration over price or something else.
Yeah, I mean, this is a claim which it's a myth essentially, but it's one which is universally believed by people on the left, for far as I can tell. But, you know, the rate of suicide has declined in rural parts of India since the genetically modified cotton became available. And in fact, you'd expect that, because it's been a huge saving for farmers not to have to spend money on pesticides. So it's a big benefit both for the environment, for biodiversity, and for farmers' health and livelihoods. So this idea that it's been somehow a terrible disaster for farmers really is a myth, and it's one which needs to be addressed, I think, because it's actually a huge success story. Farmers have on average, it's brought, I think, several hundred dollars increase for most farmers' livelihoods.
The other claim is, and this Shiva and other activists make, is that GMO crops mess with nature, pollute the sort of DNA pool, spread pollen to other crops in the wild, change ecosystems. What do you say about that?
Well, all of these are sort of claims which don't apply uniquely to genetically modified crops, to apply to any crop. I mean, every crop spreads pollen. If you're producing seeds, you need to ensure that you keep your flowering plants separate from those which could cross-pollinate. So this is completely normal stuff for farming. So these claims really don't have any basis or any special reason to target genetically modified crops in particular. So what it comes down to essentially is a sort of romantic appeal to the naturalistic fallacy, the idea that natural is always good. I think in industrialized countries, there's this kind of backlash where people feel that their life, ways of life and food supplies in particular are too artificial. And so everyone wants natural, the organic and so on. And the genetically modified is seen as unnatural. But I mean, really, there's no scientific basis to this. It's a sort of emotional position.
Talking to Mark Linus, who's the author of The God Species, How the Planet Can Survive the Age of Humans. Tell the story of golden rice and how that really symbolizes what GMOs might do in the developing world but are prevented from doing.
Golden rice is aimed at targeting vitamin A deficiency, which is a form of malnutrition which is estimated to kill between 1 and 2 million children per year who don't have enough vitamin A in their diets, primarily because they're eating white rice and very little else. And so the idea for golden rice was to put beta-carotene, which is the precursor of vitamin A, into staple food, into rice, which people are eating. It's called biofortification. It would actually supplement their diets and would prevent both the deaths and also the blindness, which are caused by vitamin A deficiency. The problem is that this has required genetic modification of rice, which has made it a target for campaigners. Greenpeace has campaigned against this for over a decade. Just this last year, there were campaigners who went and destroyed golden rice trials in the field in the Philippines. So you had this really quite extraordinary situation where a potentially life-saving intervention is being destroyed by activists who are ideologically opposed to it. And, you know, this has become one of the major currents, I think, in the GMO debate, is whether even humanitarian interventions should be allowed if they use genetic modification.
Have you come so far in your transformation of your position to have sympathy for Monsanto Corporation, which really is at the center of the demonization campaign, and, you know, has some issues to answer for here? Are you sympathetic? Did they get a bad rap?
I think that's a difficult question. I mean, I'm not in the business of helping out Monsanto. What I would like to see is an opening up of the tools of biotechnology so that they're not just in the hands of big corporations. I mean, to try to ban the entire technology because you're against a single company just is flat out illogical. It would be like trying to ban computers because you're against Microsoft or something.
To sort out the bad science from, you know, the reasonable argument here, is there any argument against GMOs or some change in the way GMOs are being marketed that you would endorse in the midst of all the confusing claims that are being made, that you would stick with as a criticism of GMOs right now?
There's nothing specific to genetically modified crops which should single them out for special treatment, even special regulatory treatment. I mean, all of the claims that are made about superweeds and resistance, all of those things apply to conventional agriculture of any sort. The science has moved on so significantly in the last few years that the term GMO, I think, is becoming increasingly meaningless because there's so many different ways now of modifying, editing the genome, moving genes around, deleting genes. When people want to know, is something GMO or not, it's not really something which scientists can give a clear answer to, because, of course, everything we eat, every domesticated crop, every domesticated animal is genetically modified from its wild relative, but not done necessarily in a laboratory, which is, you know, the way of doing it, which is now considered artificial and so horrible.
Mark Linus is visiting fellow at Cornell University, author of The God Species, How the Planet Can Survive the Age of Humans. Mark, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.